Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Empowering Family Caregivers on Blog Talk Radio. I am Susan Bida, the co-founder of eCareDiary.com and your host for today's show. So today we're focusing on a question that we've been asked a lot on eCareDiary, which is how do we hire the best care provider for our parents who are aging or for a loved one? And I think this is a very important topic and subject for our show today. We have a very distinguished guest, Melissa Khan, who is the principal and owner of Khan Healthcare Consulting. And Khan Healthcare Consulting works with organizations, helping them to develop programs and services in aging, Alzheimer's, and healthcare workforce development. And she also works with families in private preventive care planning so that they're better prepared in the aging journey. Melissa also serves on the advisory boards for Northwestern University's Alzheimer's Center, as well as she's served on the advisory boards for the Chicago and L.A. Caregiver magazines. In 2006, Melissa wrote and published the Personal Healthcare Passport, which is a practical tool for caregivers to better manage important health and medical information across the continuum of care. And she's also cared for her own parents. Melissa, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Susan. I'm glad to be here.
So, Melissa, we get asked so much on eCare Diary through emails and the message board. Let's start out by asking, when is the right time to hire a caregiver?
That's such a difficult question, in that for many people, it's a very difficult process. You know, I think most of us believe that we can take care of ourselves and we can care for our loved ones and we can do so in our own homes for as long as possible. But it doesn't always work out that way. Families oftentimes are confronted and having to make those decisions in a medical crisis. So I meet with families often to talk to them in advance to really do preventive care planning, to talk about thinking about these issues well before they're going to need them. And it's really important because I ask people to kind of put together kind of a checklist and to do a self-assessment, because it's a difficult line when you really think you need to get help. The best time to consider hiring a caregiver is when you're able to make important decisions, and that's usually prior to, as I said, a medical emergency. But here are some of the questions that oftentimes I say you could ask your loved one or you can ask yourself that are really important. Create a checklist that says, you know, can I get in and out of bed without assistance after being in a hospital? Can I bathe myself? Do I have difficulty getting around my home? Will I have to worry about falling? Can I perform the routine activities of daily living? Can I do my own grocery shopping, preparing my own meals? Can I manage my bills, manage cleaning my home, getting to and from appointments? Can I drive? Can I do laundry? Can I change linens? If those questions keep coming up and the answers are no, clearly people need assistance. So we try to get in early on to meet with people to say, okay, what's going on here? What might be precipitating this question, so we can plan ahead and really look at best practices and ways to help them hire a caregiver.
That's a great point. And yes, activities of daily living are certainly a good place to start to determine whether or not you need someone to help your loved one, your parent at home. What would be the advantage of hiring a paid caregiver versus trying to recruit someone in the family?
Well, let me tell you a story that I hear way too often, where a family that I might be in contact with has a lovely person who comes to their home or comes to grandma's house to do housekeeping, and they've approached her about becoming a caregiver for grandma, for one of their loved ones, because she's so wonderful. She really has a great heart and soul. They trust her. They feel confident with her. But the problem lies in the fact that this woman, who has a wonderful heart and soul, has not been trained. And there's specific things that you want to make sure that a caregiver comes on board with. There's a certain set of skills that are necessary, especially if you're dealing with a loved one who's had physical challenges, has come back from surgery, whether it's a hip replacement, a knee replacement, or they're dealing with a cognitive issue. It's so important to have caregivers that have been trained in the practical aspects and also have a deep knowledge of how to work emotionally in the well-being of that person. And oftentimes, caregivers that are brought in from the outside, non-trained, have a great heart, but they don't know how to transfer someone, so an accident may happen, not because they're a bad person, but they didn't know how to do a transfer appropriately, or they don't understand that, grandpa who has Alzheimer's, who repeats himself, the best way to respond is to act as though it's the first time you've heard it, and that person, well-meaning, constantly corrects grandpa so that grandpa now becomes withdrawn. So it's really important to bring in somebody who has skills and has the emotional capacity. The other thing is, oftentimes as family members, some of us are not best suited to be caregivers. Families should divvy up responsibilities and think about who can be the person who's going to be managing correspondence and communication with the outside world. Who's the person who's going to be managing taking care of the home? Who's the person who's going to be the physical primary caregiver? If you're going to be the primary caregiver, it's important to say, can I handle this emotionally? Because this is a marathon. This isn't a sprint. And you have to have the emotional wherewithal. So sometimes having a family member work with a paid caregiver can be a good balance because it gives the person respite when they need to have a break, but then you've got a professional on board who really understands what it takes.
That makes a lot of sense. It's just such a hard discussion to have with particularly someone that you love who is resistant to having a paid caregiver come in. And I'd like to just take a second here to clarify the sort of, we call them paid caregivers or some of us call them home health aides, some of us call them care providers. We're talking about those professionals who come in to care for an aging loved one or someone who's going through a long-term illness at home.
Right.
So, Melissa, we'd like to ask you, I certainly know from personal experiences, but what are the three main challenges of hiring a professional caregiver?
Well, I think the first challenge is doing it at the right time. Most people are making the decision in a panicked moment, and they're desperate. Mm-hmm. And in desperate moments, we make the wrong decisions. So I think first is to take a step back, and if you see that a loved one is aging, it's to do your due diligence in advance of a crisis, to get the names of agencies, organizations, contact people, to do some research to find out who's the one that you'd like to work with to begin with, who has a better reputation, who trains their caregivers, provides supervision, make sure they get insurance, make sure that they get the support they need 24/7. And then once you've made that decision, you have a plethora, you have a group of organizations to contact when you're ready to hire. Waiting until the last minute oftentimes causes a family to have to go through the process multiple times because they bring somebody in fast, it's the wrong person, and it was done out of desperation at the 11th hour. So I think first is really getting somebody on board early on. Second is making sure to do your interview, to do the interview of the agency or the organization you're working with. Know who they are. Are they a for-profit? Are they a non-for-profit? Oftentimes, for-profit organizations are working to maximize revenue. And they may not put in the same amount of energy and training into those staff members. A non-for-profit might. But again, this is going to differ very, in state to state. So it's really important when people call to really ask questions. Tell me about your caregivers. What level of training must they have to come work for you? What sort of training do they get in cognitive impairment and best practices, effective communication? What additional training do they get working with Parkinson's? Find out if they're getting additional training and supervision. Then you want to also find out, does this organization provide a complement of services? Do they have a social worker that they can work with, or do they work with somebody like me who does care consultations to work with the family in order to make sure that we're providing the best care possible? And what I mean by that, I'm going to give you an example. I had a client who I worked with who was retired professor, very intelligent, and the challenge was finding a caregiver who was at her intellectual capacity. She had early stage Alzheimer's, but she was very high functioning. And during the day, she oftentimes would fall asleep. The caregiver was there doing laundry, housekeeping, maybe preparing a meal, but she oftentimes, the client would be sound asleep on the couch. And then in the evenings, they had round-the-clock care, and the caregivers were complaining because the client would get up all night long and wander, and they said they think that she should go to the doctor to get medicated in order to sleep. And I said, well, before we do that, because the team that was involved was very good about communicating with all of us, and I said, is it possible that I can come over during the day so that I can watch what's going on? Because caregivers need support. They're isolated, and they don't always have the tools they need. So having assistance, having support is important. When I went there, I noticed that the caregiver is doing her job, but part of doing her job is engaging the client and bringing them into the activity that you're doing. Not letting her sit on a couch and sleep all day, it was no wonder that she was up all night. So what we did is revamped our program so that she was engaged in meaningful activities in the day. I had the caregiver take her to a concert, an adult day service program. I taught her that baking with a client is a good thing, folding a load of laundry, because meaningful engagement for people is really important. If you don't have purpose, if you don't have a place where you're needed, you're going to withdraw. And so once we did that, she was sleeping through the evenings. She was sleeping great. So part of having a good caregiver is somebody who is receptive and open to observation and help and guidance. And if a caregiver would say to I'm sorry. If a caregiver says to me, oh, I know what I'm doing, I don't need you to be here, and I've got it under control, and I'm doing what I'm doing, that would be a red flag to me. Mm-hmm. It's a team effort. And a real good caregiver is really has an understanding of finesse to engage the client in a way that looks like they're a partnership, not I'm here to come in and do the job and you sit and relax. Because if they're not meaningful engaged, there's going to be changes in circadian rhythm. They're not going to sleep at night. There's going to be other issues. If that client had gone to the doctor to get medicated, she would have been, you know, sedated all night long, sleeping all, you know, all day. And that's really not quality of life. So a good caregiver understands how to recognize some of the challenges to go back to her or his agency or a care consultant like me and say, this is what's going on. How can we enhance care and with the family? What kinds of tools and techniques can we do to make sure that her quality of life is enhanced and there's meaning here?
Now that makes a lot of sense, and thank you for sharing that story. Melissa, I wanted to ask you about, and I think you made a very good point when you were talking about the first challenge, which is you should really interview the agency itself, the not-for-profit or for-profit, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
How does a family go about identifying a good agency aside from word of mouth? Because that is, I got a phone call from a colleague in Florida desperately looking for a really good agency of home health providers. And I was surprised that she called asking for references and that she could not find them in her area on her own. So,
well, I'm going to give you a wonderful resource for your listeners so that they're well aware of this. But I want to also share a couple things. First of all, if you get a reference from somebody who's gone through this and they've worked with an organization and someone says, oh, we used caregiver agency ABC, you could. Mm-hmm. That's a good starting point because, you know, word-of-mouth referral oftentimes is a great way because if somebody's lived this, they've already gone through it, and they can give you some advice. It doesn't mean that it's going to be right for you, but a good place to start is word of mouth. The other thing is look in your city under the local area on agencies. Each city has an area on agency on aging, and in that they can give you the names of organizations that are care providers. Now, those could be some that are faith-based, some that are affiliated with hospitals, and the for-profits. They're not going to necessarily endorse one because they can't, because they're only as good as their frontline worker. But this is what you can do. You can get one of each, a for-profit, a non-for-profit, one that's affiliated with a hospital, and call with a set of questions. So here are some questions that your listeners can use when they're calling to do their due diligence. Really important is to find out if they're an agency, do the caregivers work as independent consultants or are they employed? Now you ask, why is that important? If somebody is employed, that means they're getting benefits, including health benefits, and they're getting paid on a regular basis. If it's a registry, that means that you become the employer, and you have to pay the check, but you also have to pay taxes, the FICA. You have to make sure Social Security is taken care of. So you want to find out, is this organization employing these people? When people are employed, they are more likely to be supervised. They are more likely to be trained because there's a licensure involved. So it's important that caregivers, that family members or individuals who are doing their due diligence, ask that organization to define their structure. Find out if they have any limitations. Are they privately owned? Are they connected with a hospital? And do they have geographic limitations? You might find an organization you want to work with, you love them, but find out they don't travel to your area or their caregivers don't. The other thing is, if your loved one or the person you're caring for needs medical assistance, non-medical is going to be different than having medical care. So that might be an agency that provides physical therapy, occupational therapy, has a social worker, because those are licensed individuals who can provide more hands-on care. Paraprofessionals and caregivers aren't necessarily going to have the ability, they're not licensed, depending on the state, to do certain things. They can't administer medications in most cases. They can help put together a pill box, but they won't be able to administer it. So it's really important to ask the organization what level of services they provide. Find out if those caregivers get clinical support and if it's 24/7. So if they're at your house and in the middle of the night there is an emergency and hospice is not involved, do they have somebody they can call for backup and support? Or are they left alone? Find out also, are they Medicare certified? Are they insured and bonded? You want to make sure that the person who's coming into your home is protected so that if they should fall, let's say your loved one slips in the bathtub, falls, and lands on the caregiver, and the caregiver ends up with a broken leg, you want to make sure that the agency they're working for has insurance and they're bonded so that their care providers, that their caregivers are taken care of, and you're protected as well. You also want to find out. I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
You want to find out if they do care planning. A lot of times you have a organization says, we'll send somebody to you at 5 o'clock today and we'll take over and that's it and you're fine. Well, that's not necessarily a team approach. That's somebody who's coming in to take over. And we now know that that's not the most effective way to provide care and to provide quality of life is when somebody comes in to take over. It has to be a team approach. And that takes time. So somebody's going to have to come out to the house, do an assessment of that person, and really follow up and do, a set of interviews to make sure they're sending the right person. You also want to find out about if they do criminal background checks, if they do reference checks, what, level of training do they require their caregivers to have, and how the billing practices work. So there's a lot of questions that people should ask.
I want to discuss reference checking and background checks. But mm-hmm. before we go there, I want to, we were talking a little bit about, hiring through a licensed agency, mm-hmm. Versus otherwise. And I guess my question is, many of these agencies will charge by the hour for the service of the care provider.
Right.
What are we talking about in terms of price ranges? What tends to be more expensive than others?
Before we talk about prices, let me throw something out to you. When asking about pricing, it's really important to find out if it's more economical to hire somebody by the hour or by 24 hours. A lot of these for-profits are in the business. It's a business for them. They're chains. They're franchises. So if they can charge you by the hour and they're there 12 hours, it actually may be more economical to have somebody come in for a 24-hour period. So I put that out there so that when you're calling, when your listeners are saying, you know, I'm looking into this, they should consider asking what the difference is for an 8-hour shift as opposed to a 4-hour, as opposed to 24 hours. That's the first part. And then, I'm sorry, your question again. I lost my train of thought for a second.
Right. Well, what is, I guess, is it more expensive to work with a licensed care, a licensed agency versus any other type of method of hiring home health provider?
Here's my policy on this. You get what you pay for. And I have families who will tell me they're spending X amount of dollars on a dog walker, but they will complain that they have to spend $25 to take care of grandma an hour. And so I look at it this way, and I said, well, let's break this up. If it's economical hardship, then there are organizations and area, you know, agency and aging that you can contact in your area to find out if there's any sort of assistance, if you qualify, if it's a financial hardship. But my concern is when you go to a place that's a registry and they only charge, you know, maybe $10 an hour, that means that they're not necessarily licensed or bonded. And if that caregiver gets sick, let's say grandpa has shingles, and that caregiver gets shingles, that caregiver is not protected. That caregiver is not going to get paid for lost wages and can't work then for how long because she or he has shingles. So it's important that the agency you contact is really taking care of the caregivers because, in essence, if they're taken care of, your family members are going to be cared for. If it's a registry, and again, I don't want to badmouth everything. I just want people to be looking at this with their eyes wide open, that it's really important to make a decision that's best for you. If you're comfortable with that and that's all that you can afford, you're going to do what you have to do. But I do believe in a lot of places, if you find out that somebody is charging $50 an hour as opposed to $12 an hour, I'd want to know what they're providing that is so different. You know, what's the quality of the workers, their level of training, and what kind of backup support and supervision do you get?
So for people who are listening out there who are who have never been through this before and are listening to this program to kind of understand the world that they're about to enter, when you talk about the cost of hiring home health, what kind of a range are we talking about? So you've mentioned like $10 an hour at the
It varies all over the country.
Yeah.
In bigger cities, you're going to be paying more. But again, there are people that will hire a neighbor. They will hire somebody else and have that person sent to a couple of classes to get them up to speed. So things are doable. It's not that it's not. I just think it's imperative when you're dealing with somebody who has a chronic illness and it requires certain skill sets to bring people in that understand that. Because accidents happen not because they're bad, but because they don't have the knowledge to provide the right care. And it's really important, too. It's not only the physical care of providing transfers, like they know how to transfer somebody who's maybe paralyzed from waist down or doesn't know how to get on and off a commode. It's also somebody who understands how to effectively communicate with somebody who has primary progressive aphasia or somebody that is, you know, reliable and trustworthy and honest, and so that when you say you need them every Saturday at 8 a.m., come heck or high water, you know they're going to be there. Or that the person is compassionate when grandpa gets frustrated because he can't express himself, that caregiver waits patiently and doesn't push grandpa and doesn't answer for him. She waits. She has the finesse that understands. So those are the kind of soft skills that are really important that oftentimes get overlooked because we're looking at preparing a meal, dressing someone, bathing them. When I say the reality is, the soft skills are really what's going to enhance quality of life when somebody bonds with somebody and somebody cares for them and they get it.
Melissa, thank you for that. That's a very good point. Let's talk about checking references and their backgrounds. What's the right and the wrong way to do that?
Well, if you're doing your own independent questioning, and it's important, I think, to ask the important questions. You don't want to just say, you know, how is Mary? How is she as a caregiver? You put a picture out. Say, you know, if Mary was accused of stealing something, how would she respond to that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you might be thinking, why would she ask that question? But if Mary is going to be working with somebody who has Alzheimer's, Mary is sharp, and Mary knows how to answer and says, you know, if Mrs. Smith accuses me of stealing her jewelry, the first thing I'm going to say is, Mrs. Smith, let's go look for it. I'm going to help you. We're going to go start looking for it, as opposed to somebody who's not trained in that area would say, I didn't steal it. I would never take your stuff. Why are you accusing me? So when
right.
you interview, ask questions. Another question is, you have a client, and that client says to you, life isn't worth living anymore. How do you respond? Now, the right answer would be, I would listen, and then I would listen. I would not pass judgment. At the end of that conversation, I would call my supervisor, and I'd say, I'm not sure what's fact or fiction here. I'm not sure if Mr. Smith is really thinking about this or if he's just sad because he's dealing with a tough situation and he just wanted to talk. But I wanted to make sure somebody who's clinically trained has this information and can make the decision to talk to the staff and decide. The wrong answer would be saying, oh, my God, he's going to kill himself. I'm calling 911.
Mm-hmm.
When families ask the right questions, they gain insight. When you gain insight, you understand that the person you're bringing on board is going to be best suited to meet the emotional, spiritual, and well-being needs of your loved one. And that is essential.
Yes, it makes so much sense. And I'm so glad that you are talking about this kind of new way of doing reference checking, because I think a lot of people think of, oh, well, you know, we want to make sure they don't have a criminal record, which, of course, I think is a given and all that. But most importantly, how are, you know, aside from all that,
right.
making sure that they're the right fit and how they'll handle certain, you know, sensitive situations, and particularly as many of us are experiencing, you know, obviously dementia and Alzheimer's are the long-term illnesses affecting most of our elderly out there. And those are a lot of the more frequent questions that we get.
Right,
you know,
and those numbers...
How do we find the right person? Right.
Right. And those numbers are only going to increase because the predictions are by 2050, we're going to have over 15 million Americans living with this disease. And since this
exactly.
disease requires most of the care provided in home, anywhere from 2 to 18 years, that means we're all going to be caring for someone that we love that's dealing with a dementing illness, and we have to make sure that we're bringing in the right people. The other part
exactly.
that I'd really like to emphasize is that caregivers work isolated, and so when you're finding a caregiver, it's really important to know they have support. Like, does the agency, the organization they work for provide, you know, monthly support groups for them? Because they have to run by the challenges they're facing and know they have somebody to turn to say, this is what's going on. What do I do if this should happen again? The other thing is I want to make sure your listeners know when they're trying to find, we kind of started this before about locating a elder care you know, organization, they can contact elder care locators at 1-800-677-1116 or contact their local area agencies on aging for information.
Melissa, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to stop you right there because our show is about to end, and I want our audience to know that we enjoyed having you on our show. I want to thank you.
Oh,
and
thank
I want to let
Susan.
Our audience know if they want more information about Melissa Khan, please visit khanhealthcare.com, khanhealthcare.com, one word. I want to thank our audience very much for tuning in. Join us next Tuesday, July 9th at 2 p.m. Eastern for our live online support group created by and for caregivers. It's moderated by Marjorie Papst, who is our caregiving expert, and she'll be speaking to Heidi Eisenhart, who is an elder care attorney. at Sheffield Lohmann about how to prepare for a visit to the attorney, what are the right questions to ask, and how to remain focused on a plan that is uniquely yours. To learn about eCare Diary, visit us at ecarediary.com. Thank you, and have a great afternoon. Thank you, Melissa. Take care.
Thank you.